Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Squaresoft has created one of the most cinematic interactive experiences ever. Final Fantasy VII has an interesting collection of worlds where no two screens are the same, and the classic combat scenes are as exciting as ever.
Good morning, video games. Welcome to Filthy Casuals, a podcast about video games, hosted by three very kind and extremely knowledgeable boys. Thank you very much for joining us. My name is Tommy Dasilo, and with me, as always,
Ben Fennell, reporting in live from Osaka, Japan. I've come here to do some specific Filthy Casuals roving reporting in the home of video games, and boy, have I got a lot to tell you. Adam Knox over in the Melbourne offices, what are you seeing today?
Thank you, Ben. Why am I holding a pretend pen microphone in front of my mouth? There's a genuine microphone in front of my mouth. I'm reporting video games still exist in Melbourne, but having Googled the places where you are in Japan before we started recording, I wish I weren't here. Whatever gift card I could get to send to you on holiday saying, wish I wasn't where I am, I'd love that reverse gift card.
So you had to Google Tokyo to get an idea in your head of what Tokyo's like?
The specific areas you condescending.
Speaking of posting things, I'm going to spend this afternoon filming some stuff in Harajuku, and I've got my I made some bootleg t-shirts of the Clifton Hill McDonald's a few months ago. So I'm going to take them around Harajuku and try and see if I can get the shops there to stock them for me for a little video. And I got over here and I was like, I didn't really bring enough. I should have brought a couple more, but I didn't really have the room in my suitcase. And I was like, I guess I could order some and get them posted express to the hotel that I'm staying at. And then I went, oh no, hang on, the person that posts them is me. I can't do that.
I mean, I could help you out probably. I have access to the place where I could get them and post them
true.
From. However,
that's true.
If you ask me to do it, I question whether it was a good idea for long enough that I convince you not to do it. Even though I love the idea of in the future, like of you selling these these fake McDonald's shirts.
Thank you. Thank you.
Please, the lawyers are listening.
Dumb McDonald's.
If I send them to you, you sell a ton of them. Harajuku girls are wearing them. The Gwen Stefani of the future, is inspired by the Harajuku girls of the future to make Blood Sugar Sex Magic 2 or whatever album that was.
Yeah. But you've not sent me my shirts. You've bootlegged the shirt a second level, and you've put yourself on it as sort of like a Ronald McDonald figure.
Yeah.
So then the Gwen Stefani of the future is sort of essentially dressing up like Adam Knox.
I've changed.
That's the future I want to see.
All of the font is different because you won't double check them. You're not going to look. You know what they say. I've written over the top of it, Tommy is dumb. And then in the future, you know, Gwen Stefani bot has a song called Tommy Dumb.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
And Tommy, I keep telling you, you can't go to Harajuku and film the girls there. It's illegal. I know you've set aside, for some reason, 8 hours to do it, but you're not meant to. It's frowned upon.
No, they're modeling my clothing. I got it shipped here from Australia. You can check the receipts.
I'm just using this mirror on my foot to get better angles of the illustration, I swear.
This future I'm imagining, by the way, such a wild idea of a different universe is probably in my head because I've been playing a fucking absolute ton of Final Fantasy VII Rebirth this last week.
Oh,
it came out
yeah
last Thursday or something, And like, Tommy, I was like, yeah, oh, I'm excited to play a game. And you were like, what are the chances of you having finished it by the time we record this game that is widely being reported to be, you know, in the triple digits of hours long?
Unfinishable game.
I said 0% because it's like between 60 and 70 hours long, which I know because I finished it last night.
Yes!
Yes!
Yes! I knew it! I knew it!
Yes!
I'm fucking
We
done.
Did have a side discussion.
I didn't
Knox.
Waver
I mean,
at all when I said, what are the chances that you finished it by next Thursday? Because combo of things, it's out a little bit earlier than normal. Mm. We're recording this a little bit later than normal, so there's an extra 48 hours. You're not having to travel to do this episode, so there's a few hours saved as well. And I did... When I said to you, what are the chances, and you said 0%, I was like, I'm not buying it. I'm holding strong here. I'm not believing it. I'm Memento style, don't believe his lies written on my chest.
I privately messaged Tommy, and we agreed that you would have definitely finished it. The chances were 100%. I believed in you, and I'm proud of you, and I'm fucking jealous. Cause,
exactly, that's it. Yeah, it's jealousy. We haven't even been able to play 1 minute.
Don't be jealous of how I live. It's also come, you know, some people worry about like, oh shit, are my friends like messaging each other about me behind my back? It's comforting to know that the answer is both yes, and that it's about, I hope you can finish Final Fantasy in a week.
Yeah, to be fair, this conversation about you playing Final Fantasy happened while we were sitting in the Square Enix Final Fantasy Rebirth Cafe. So we did, and that was like the best, that was like the closest that we could get to playing the game. So that it was just us sitting there being like, imagine being Adam and actually playing it right now. How good would that be?
To be fair, Billy Goat's Gruff, your guys' drinks and food over there, I saw some photos of what you had, looked pretty good. That like little sugar sculpture of like a crystal in one of the drinks looked great. What did they have?
Yeah.
How's Japan? How was the Final Fantasy Cafe? We'll talk about Rebirth later.
Yeah, so the cafe was great. It had moved. We'd been there once before, like 9 years ago, and so it was a little discombobulating. It's like in an underground arcade next to a train station. So not like the most, you know, salubrious surroundings for this cool, like accessible video games cafe. But it was sick. In true Japan style, you book for a certain time, everyone politely lines up, you get sent in, you know, two by two. They give you in the line a little piece of paper and it had the list of all the drink options and you get a free one, you know, just by booking. And Tommy was a little late. He got a little bit more lost than me. And so I had to make the choices for both of us. I chose Cloud for myself, which was the drink you mentioned, Knox, with like the materia crystals formed in it.
Yeah.
And then for Tommy, I chose the Aerith special drink. No pictures, by the way. Literally, you're just going on like either you get a hot coffee, an iced coffee, you know, or a Cloud or an Aerith.
Yeah.
Happy with the Cloud. The Aerith was, what was it in the end? It was, they came to the table with a glass teapot filled with pink and they poured it into a little teacup for Tommy.
Yeah, it was like a strawberry tea or something like that. It was okay. Fruity tea, which it's cold here, so it was nice. So the collab cafe here, there's a lot of them. It's a pretty frequent thing. Pretty commonly, you know, you go in and the cafe kind of is sort of themed around whatever the collab is. There's often a merch store with a lot of stuff to buy. That's like a big part of it. And I think the one commonality of all these things is the food is, it's on message, like it's on brand, but it's fairly average.
I was going to say.
It's not the best meal you have in Japan.
A pink tea is a very Aerith drink. It's, you know, it's lovely. Mm-hmm. It's pink. It's warm. Halfway through, you're done with it because it's going to go cold.
I will say, as good as mine looked, the Cloud one, it was basically just yellow cordial on ice. So, you know.
They fucking tricked you, man. They got you. Yeah, man, drink this yellow drink.
Yeah.
No, the ingredients aren't listed. It's just called a Cloud. Drink up.
But this was made by the people that made the game. So that's canon that's what Cloud drinks. He likes his cordial.
I thought it was going to be it coming in a cup that had a picture. Like, I thought it would be some kind of collectible thing.
Right.
But it was not. Your meal, Tommy, looked good. You had, like, this... it was like a Moogle-shaped...
A Moogle pork bun. So it had this little, like, face painted on it. On the menu, on the picture menu, it looked like a dessert because he's white. It looked like a big thing of like ice cream or something. But it was like a decent enough pork bun with some stuff stuck on it. And you had what was the theme of yours? Yours is a sandwich.
I think, was it like the Junon sandwich?
Shrimp sandwich.
Yeah, it was basically like a prawn sandwich. Again, nice, like... Not the best bread you'll have in Japan. Literally probably the worst meal I've had in Japan ever. and that's like, to like the point of that is that every other meal I've had has been like a 9 out of 10. So like this was like fine cafeteria lunch sort of situation. I'm going to see if I can find the menu.
I still want to. I'd eat that Junon sandwich though. Put that dolphin that helps you out in Junon down inside of that.
Mm.
Yum yum! I can jump higher after eating it.
we were in like the you know it's the surroundings that you're there for. Like it was cool that it was it was full of supposedly big fans of Final Fantasy VII Rebirth, which you have to wonder why they weren't just at home playing the game. sitting there listening to, they had the soundtrack kind of going the whole time. They had like big screens playing, you know, little highlights from the game. They had these heaps of these like really beautiful, like really high quality printouts of artwork from the game. And for, every menu item that you got a placemat and you also got a coaster at random. I think we both got two when we turned up. Both of mine were Reno. And then as we were leaving, I said to the lady, like, oh, could I maybe like switch these for like another one? Because you just kind of get them at random. And she gave me two more, and both of them also Reno. So I now have.
There's been a lot of people coming through that cafe through the day being like, can I switch this for not Reno? Because why have you even bothered to make a Reno one?
Yeah. I felt bad that the first one Tommy opened was Reno, but when he opened the second one and it was Reno, I felt fantastic. Yeah. I really felt energized.
Four total Renos and my favorite Arnold Schwarzenegger movie. Getting four total Renos and also backing yourself against me being able to dedicate a week's worth of time to this game. You've got to buy a lottery ticket over there or something, Tommy. You're on one.
I'm taking a lot of L's over here. It was fun. It was nice. That thing of that is cool about Japan, where something like this is, you know, there is this space dedicated to it and it's full, and like at Lawson, the convenience store chain over here, they have a collab going at the moment where you can get, I think, like, I don't know, like stickers and like a cup. You're just seeing stuff of this game everywhere.
Yeah,
like it's not in Melbourne. You might get, you know, you might see one big ad at a bus stop or something, but like here, it really is like kind of like feels like being here the week that this huge game is coming out. Nearly every store you walk past, you're seeing something for it in some capacity, which is cool.
I still remember vividly when like. That those planks of wood that are, if you walk down towards into Melbourne Central from Swanston Street, there's like murals that are ads always painted along the side of there. There was a Doom Eternal one there for about 3 years because it was painted just before COVID.
And oh,
the highest level of brand engagement that I've ever seen a game here get. Reno is not even in 95% of the game, by the way. They specifically on, they're like, someone goes, where's Reno? They're like, he's on holiday.
He's on holiday in Akihabara.
Yeah.
He's taken the form. He got cursed. And he's taken the form of a coaster. He's taken the form of 800 coasters, 90% of which are currently owned by a young man from Australia.
Yeah, on like the first day I was here, I was on the train and like obviously video ads on the train, like a wild thing that probably isn't good. I feel like it all being in Japanese lends it this sort of like more exotic air than it would if you were just at home and it was like an Aussie McDonald's commercial. But
yeah, for maths.
I was on the train and it was playing an ad on every screen, which is all along the carriage. It was an ad for Final Fantasy VII Rebirth, and it was not just an ad, it was sort of like a featurette with one of the developers, and it was like him retrospectively going through like I guess Beyond Crisis, the original Final Fantasy. There were clips playing and they went into Crisis Core and Advent Children, and it was this like 5 minute long featurette like playing on the subway, which is I guess, yeah, again, how ubiquitous it is. It's just a different, it's like seeing ads for footy or something in Melbourne. It's like, because everyone likes this.
And you're right. If that was on a train here and it was like, Ken Bruce has gone mad. Like, I'd get off the train, I'd walk, whatever. I don't have to be there on time.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, we went and did some used video game store hunting. And Ben, you found a copy of, what's that? The first Final Fantasy VII spin-off thing?
Dirge of Cerberus.
Oh, Dirge of Cerberus.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. Dirge of Cerberus.
Yeah.
Which I thought you were going to pull the trigger on, but you did not.
Well, I never owned a PS2, and the only thing I know about Dirge of Cerberus is it was like probably the first Final Fantasy VII property that everyone was like, oh, this is bad. This isn't even like fun for a fan. It's a shitty game that's not fun to play. So, and I'm not like, I'm not someone who buys stuff that's like bad for the kitsch value generally. So yeah. I just couldn't justify it. And like knowing I was going to be here for another like 10 days or so and fill up my suitcase with stuff that I really, really like. But I did get myself a little cube, Chocobo plushie from the Final Fantasy VII store. And I may even go back and get something else.
God damn.
Yeah, they have these cool Shinra beer glasses, which I was like, man, imagine knocking back a cold one on the company dime of Shinra.
Yeah.
just pretending I'm in the employee cafe just with my boys after a hard day's polluting.
Really, we're really a pack of dorks.
Well, so the funny thing about the Square Cafe is that everyone else in there was either a like 20-something-year-old woman or a guy there with a 20. Like, it was mostly like young women who were sort of like either there by themselves or with friends. I was like, oh, yeah, the approach to this culture is completely different over here.
Well,
and like, we're still like, you know, lame white otaku weebs in comparison, but like the general vibe is like no, this is for everyone.
Amount of stuff we've been to that is like very kind of at home considered like childish or for babies, I think I've seen barely any children so far at any of these establishments we've been at.
Walking around like you're in Fallout or something. No kids anywhere. to Final Fantasy's credit, it has, to my impression, a higher proportion of women who are into it than a lot of other video game series. And again, to its credit.
Right.
I'm itching and raring to talk about the game.
We got more Japan stuff, but we'll do it. Let's get into the game. Let's
do you want to?
I want to hear about this goddamn game.
Let me out the gates. Yeah. I'm like, you know,
from the trains,
those like psycho horses at horse races who are like, punching up against the door before they let out. Yep. That's me. I'm gonna buck
you're
my rider
you're
off.
You're a bucking. Yeah, you're a bucking bronco.
I'll be put out to stud one day, and the kids will be good. But this guy, he was always trouble. Only one man could ride him.
I say bucking bronco. Maybe I should say tiny bronco.
Oh, it's the name of the plane in the game.
A reference. Yep.
So, Final Fantasy VII Rebirth is so fucking good. I have really, really liked playing through it. It is... I'll talk about it here as well. Like, I finished it, but I obviously will not do any spoilers, partly because the two other people I'm talking to don't want to hear them, but I'm sure you listening to this also don't. So no actual spoilers at all. In general, I will say just about the story up front that if you played... So you need to have played Remake. Don't bother with this if you haven't. It barely makes sense anyway at points. So like it just assumes that you know Final Fantasy VII pretty well, that you've played a lot of the side stuff, and that you definitely played Remake. So that's the coming in point for the story and everything, which for the most part is...
And what about... Sorry, what about Nox, the original game?
Yes.
An advanced familiarity with the original game.
Yeah, like I said, it like assumes that you've played it, and also like at points is doing stuff deliberately to play up the fact that it is starting to approach events that happen in that game, in the original Final Fantasy VII, and it does it pretty well for the most part. And then it's very similar in story structure to Remake in some ways, where it's mostly covering the stuff that happens in Final Fantasy VII with like expanded side stuff, and then it's not afraid to just go and also fuck that and do its own thing when it wants to, to differing levels of comprehensibility. It is utterly psycho at points.
It's made up a new word. That's cool.
Shakespeare did it. I'm a generation's greatest writer.
This is only making me more curious and excited to play it. I don't necessarily know that I loved all of that stuff in Remake, but I definitely found it interesting. Please continue.
I don't know if I necessarily love it in this either, but I think I do. But like, not because of how great it is. The ending, especially the last like sort of, I don't know, handful of hours of that game, I'd love to talk about in full one day, but that's not for today. But it's not a spoiler to let you know there is an ending. And this is part two of a three-game run as well. So I am so willing to let them have that third game to make sense of it all, which is how the story should be structured anyway. For the meat of the game, you are going through the portion of Final Fantasy VII where you sort of travel the world. When you first get let out into the greater, whatever that planet's called, they always just call it the planet. And you're traveling around a bunch of different areas that are huge, that have a ton of stuff to do in them, that are so good looking. The music behind all of them is incredible. The minute to minute stuff that you're doing is creative and like snappy and engaging and fun and just has a personality to it. Everything that we talked about at the time with Final Fantasy 16 of it being like, just something missing there, being a bit dry, being a bit slow, being the writing's like just not doing it for us. It's all here. Everything went from into this. All of that heart and personality and sense of like good humor and fun is so like engaging in this game. It's really good. Like I found parts of it actually funny and bits of it aren't and whatever, but there's so much of it and it's so nonstop in how much shit there is to do in this game. Some of which is, so when you're in the meat of it, it's several different open world areas that are kind of connected, but sort of not, that each have kind of Ubisoft-y things to do in them. If you're being a little, derogatory maybe, where it's literally like climb this tower and it'll spark a couple other places on the map where you can go and do these other activities. go and fight these.
I love climbing a tower. Whoa. Fuck me, I love climbing
Brother,
a tower.
Brother, there's probably 50 towers in this, so you've got some clever timing ahead of you.
All right.
And then, so you've got the towers, and you've also got your ground towers, which are life springs, which will spark other places to show up around you. Those being like fights with special types of enemies. You're gathering all this data for... do you remember that guy Chadley from Remake?
Absolutely.
Little robot kid.
I only remember Reno.
Well, keep remembering, buddy. He ain't showing up until literally, I think, the last chapter of this game. The Turks are in it a bunch, but yeah. I forgot. I think it's from Final Fantasy VII proper, where he just sort of was off for a bit. I don't remember why. Right.
Yeah. No, neither. I feel like there was some like unspoken like inter-Turk rivalry slash romance that was never really at the forefront.
It rings a bell. And
a
lot of this
Rude?
Stuff.
Is he showing up?
Dude, Rude is all up in your McFucking McBusiness. Rude is all
walking around
you.
On his knees.
You got a lot of Rude. You got Eleanor. I don't remember how to say her name. Sung is like over at Shinra headquarters. So you're going through these open world areas, doing all these bits and pieces. Most of it is pretty fun. It's like these quick little like rhythm game puzzles to weaken the area's like summon boss who you can fight just through Chadley. He'll have same as in Remake, the little summon challenges to do so you can get yourself an Alexander or whatever you want. You've got these little Moogle shops where you have to go in and round up the shop owner Moogles, baby Moogles, and it's some of the worst shit I've ever fucking done in any game. I hate those.
Right.
The Moogle bits are fucking bad. They're actually flat out bad. I hate them. But they're the one. And then other bits and pieces of like a challenge to sneak around and catch a chocobo so you can ride a chocobo around this part of the world.
Cool.
Lots of different breeds of chocobos you move through the game who have different abilities in that area. Lots of different varied looking, they're all from, you know, the Final Fantasy VII games, but beautiful looking, varied, interesting places to run around. And you're not doing anything particularly different to any other sort of open world game has done before. And the controls can be a bit stiff in the open world. As you're like climbing over stuff, it's kind of like jerky and jumpy and will not be like that fun to move around in some of the time, but it's still great. The detail that's in the world is so intricate and thought out and good looking. There's like some problems with some of the lighting stuff of like when you go between indoors and outdoors, it's trying to do like the HDR effect of like, oh, it's so bright outside, but it doesn't work well sometimes. But most of the time it looks fucking incredible. Like the characters are so detailed and expressive. All of the cinematic stuff looks amazing. I love the little cutscenes that they'll do in like a battle when you get to a certain like a midpoint of a fight will like swing up and the enemy will do some shit. It all looks fucking awesome. It sounds great. The music is beautiful and like uses the Remake opportunity of taking those old tunes and doing something new with them. It uses it so well. There's so much music in here. Like, just to give you an example, there's a mission early on of like someone saying, can you take my dog to this other place because I want the dog to deliver a little package for my son who I don't talk to, so you've got to escort the dog over there. And they've made a song for like this mission and like one other one out of this a huge amount of them where it's this little dog running song that's like bow wow wow bow wow wow, and like it's so cute and nicely done and fun and such a nice little unique thing to have for this like one mission that ultimately boils down to an escort mission where you run and you find some monsters that go in the way, but it's got so much heart behind it that you're not really thinking in those terms while you're doing it, I don't think. Or I didn't find that I was, because also that combat that you're doing, and I'm sorry, I'm talking for so long here, that combat that you're doing is fucking amazing. It took me a bit to kind of get back into it because every different character who you're playing as has quite different skills and quite a different sort of rhythm you need to play as them with. But once you're back into that, it's so clever. It's so much fun to be in. It's such a good mix between kind of action-y, almost Devil May Cry-ish type of stuff of dodging and actively blocking and attacking and all of that stuff, figuring out when to use your attacks. The slow motion effect when you go into the menu and deciding what spell to use or whatever. It's so fucking cool. It looks...
Yeah, this is the element of the game that I guess I can speak to as well, Nox, because I played the demo, which is... Yeah, the Nibelheim segment, which is like relatively long. It's like a few hours from memory.
Yeah.
And then a big open world chunk as well. And yeah, the like, and again, not to like shit on Final Fantasy 16, but it that game lacked those extra features like the active time battle recreation, slow-mo thing that you just mentioned, Nox. And then the sort of the movement, it's so rapid and fun. You cross the sort of combat arenas so rapidly, you feel like you're kind of in control the entire time. And it's more about remembering the abilities you have, because the bit that I played, it throws you back in at like a high level, and so everyone's got all of these your bravers and your cross slashes and shit like that. And it's really more about remembering which one is sort of like going to let you traverse across the battlefield, or you have to be, you know, position yourself correctly before you use it. And then, also remembering to switch between characters and take the most advantage of their abilities. And that's not to even mention the materia and the equipment and the way that you can customize each character through the sort of, the selections you make with those.
Yeah. There's every character kind of has their different role based on their like unique individual special abilities and whatever. And you're right, like switching between them often and knowing who should be in what role, spending some time banking some of those like action charges that you get so that when an attack hits later, you'll be quickly able to do a cure spell after or whatever. Getting that rhythm down, knowing who works well together. There's a new thing in this that wasn't in Remake called Synergy Attacks. I don't believe they're in Remake anyway.
I don't think so.
A combination of two characters, once they've done enough actions, three or four actions each, you can do a synergy attack, which will be the two of them teaming up to do something like a big spin that'll just hurt an enemy, or something that'll... after you do it, they'll get an extra little action bar. So the time it takes to fill up two, they'll get three. They'll have infinite magic points for a while, stuff like that. Using them strategically, you got more of these summons who you can use after you like stagger an enemy. It'll start a summon charge, and then you can bring in a big bloke to help you fight, which I love to do. all sorts of spells, all the elemental weakness stuff. Everyone's got their own different equipment, which has their own materia in it, and you can sort of automate the equipment upgrade process. There's like weapons have little upgradable powers you can put in them now. There's a whole skill tree thing that's new to this one, which lets you unlock new like either just stat increases or new moves or new synergy attacks. All sorts of shit is in here, and it doesn't get overwhelming, I don't think. Like, it's deep and it's detailed and it's pretty complex and there's a lot going on, and the combat sometimes requires you to... I don't think it ever gets, like, super hard, but it asks you to know what you're doing. And despite all of that, I don't think it's overwhelming. I don't think it's unapproachable. I could see it being an issue if you've got, like, mobility issues or something like that. Like, it is pretty action-focused, so it's not RPG-ish like original Final Fantasy VII, which your mileage will vary for that stuff. But, like, it's so fun. There's so much of it in here. And the fact that I didn't get bored of it for a second over a week's worth of time, like... almost every waking hour wanting to play this fucking game. It's been psycho.
This episode of Filthy Casuals is brought to you by the folks over there at Manscaped.
Fine folks, fine products, fine little hairs.
Yep.
You, that's what you can get yourself if you use Manscaped stuff. If it's
that's
what
right.
you prefer, you
yeah,
can
yeah.
it however you want.
You can use the Lawnmower 5.0. You can put on the little length attachment.
Yep.
Or you can go balls to the wall. With no hair whatsoever,
oh,
thanks
yeah.
to Manscaped.
Mm-hmm.
You can go gift mode if you want. These make, I think, good gifts.
Yep.
The stuff that Manscaped make, like the performance package
yep.
that includes that Lawnmower 5.0 and a bunch of other stuff. They've got the beard hedger. Mm-hmm. They got the weed whacker for your nose and for your ears. They got all sorts of things that I think you should do your own due diligence on.
Mm.
Head over to manscaped.com, and while you're checking out with your goods, use the code FILTHY and you'll get yourself 20% off and free shipping.
Holy shit.
That's good.
If you're getting someone a gift, you don't even have to mention that. That's a little cheeky savings.
That's for you.
For daddy.
Damn, not everybody wins.
That should be an option when you can click like, is this a gift? Do you want us to put a card? You should be able to put... Can you put a price tag on this as if it's been accidentally left on, but make it way more than what it actually
is? Oh, was. Yeah,
so
that's
I
true.
Look really, really generous.
Yes. Writing a note trying to get away with that where it says, this gift is from $300.
Happy $500.
They're much cheaper than that. And
yes.
also, if you use that code FILTHY, once again, 20% off and free shipping with the code FILTHY at Manscaped today or any other day. But today...
It's cool because it sounds like from, you know, this being a follow-on from Remake, they could have just done basically that same thing again, made a very similar feeling game, and just seeing more of the story would have been enough for people because it is a follow-on. Mm. It's not really a sequel. It's like the next chapter.
Yeah.
But it's like the open world nature of it is the most kind of interesting thing to me because something I found about Remake... Not that this was a criticism, but that you would go to these areas that are so detailed and so, like, you know, beautifully designed, and you're in them for such a short period. You know, you just kind of pass through. And I always thought that that was just, like, a pretty, like, again, I didn't think that that was a negative. It was more like it spoke to just, like, such an insane level of, like, artistic dedication from the team that they would... you know, bother to put so much detail into something that the player spends barely any time in where you can imagine another team might go, oh, we've got to artificially put all this stuff in here to kind of like make more of the game take place in here if we're spending the time and resources into, you know, making this part of it. But it did mean that you would be in this kind of beautiful area and then the story moves on and you don't get to fully take it in again. So knowing that you kind of spend more time in the, like, getting to absorb that in this game is that's the thing that's kind of the most appealing to me.
You kind of do. The different regions you certainly spend more time in as a whole, but each individual sort of bit, there's like one thing to do there and then you're moving to the next part of this like open world chunk, which is great. It's the same attitude to it of like, let's make this look great and detailed and like a world, but just on this scale that is pretty unbelievable because you're like, you're going through a number of these open world regions that are each big and like, it's surprising and it's pretty crazy. The scale of what they've done here. 'Cause then as you're going through, there's a ton, like maybe too many. This is almost the exact opposite thing of, Remake in a way where Remake was like this one part of the story that they're like, let's flesh out this part of the story really fully so that you're traveling through this detailed retelling of that part of the story. And this is very different in that the main story of this game isn't really, there's not that much of it. Like, it's the same as in Final Fantasy VII, the original, where this chunk of the game is a lot of like, is Sephiroth in the next town? Oh, right, fuck him. We'll get back on the chocobos and we'll go. He's in the next town now? Yeah. Fuck my ass. Crazy translation in the original. But
it's not the worst element of translation from the original, from memory.
This is sort of the opposite of that, where it's a bunch of small segments of story, or smaller. They're still quite long, but it's more episodic, I suppose, where you're doing this story and maybe this party member character has their backstory portion here and maybe this other tangent happens here, but then each of those individual bits of like the world and the little side missions that you're doing and the strange characters who you're meeting in these bits, even if they're kind of superfluous, they're so much fun that, like, I really enjoy them. Like, there's parts that just don't need to be in there at all. Almost all of this game is beside the point of the main thrust of what's happening in this game, but it's sick for that. It's like a Witcher or something like that, where I think that had more of a straight storyline to it as well. But this is, imagine if it was like 20% of that amount of story or something, and then a ton of really good side stuff as you go through.
Right.
'Cause not to like say that the story is too thin or anything, I think it's fine the way they've done it, because the characters and the ensemble cast and the interactions there are the story of this. It's these people bonding, like Final Fantasy 15 or something like that. It's this road trip where that's part of what has made these games so good, and is part of the enduring thing about Final Fantasy 7, is the characters are fantastic. They're all so good. They're so well done. The voice acting is pretty great across the board. The amount of it, this game reminds me a lot of Mass Effect 2, where you've got this like crew of people who you're learning more about and talking to more, and they're interacting in interesting ways, but you've got all six of them with you at all times, only three in your party, but you're all walking around as a group. So there's so much chatter and so much like fun stuff. Whenever you kind of split up for a story thing, you can walk around the town and they'll generally be off doing something that you can go talk to them about. It really works. When you're walking around as all six of you, it's pretty fun because there's like way too many like loose physics objects in this. Every chair is a chair that you can kick over or whatever, and you just will. Whenever you're running anywhere, you're kicking a thousand things over and knocking them all around the town, and it's insane. And sometimes the people will get in your way and whatever. But anyway, so there's so much of this is... It's a road trip adventure story. So much of it is side stuff, but then so much of that side stuff is so fun and like inventive and surprising when you come across it. I don't want to like spoil what any of the things are by giving too many examples. So like there's just a lot of it, and it's constantly like joyful. It's really crazy, the scale of this thing. I was like kind of blown away by it.
And well, that was always the thing that we couldn't wrap our heads around, right, Nox? Having played the entire original game, it's like, well, they end up traveling the world for like a third, if not more, of that game, which itself was, you know, like a pretty long JRPG for its era. And it sounds like, the thing we always said is like, well, they can't just like recreate the whole thing, but it sounds like they've come as close to it as is humanly possible.
It's honestly fucking bananas. Because, like, in the PS1 game as well, like, you go to a bunch of different towns or villages or whatever, but they're all small in the way that, like, you know, you just let things be like that. And these are kind of the modern equivalent of that, but they're pretty fucking big. And, like, I don't think it's, like, probably on paper bigger than any other of the enormous open world games that I'm having my head about it, like The Witcher 3 and stuff like that. But, it's the same size as them, and it's the effect of the scale is really impactful in a way that a lot of games don't manage to pull off. It really has a sense of being, and maybe it partly is because it's a world that I'm familiar with, but like seeing it blown up to this size, honey, I blew up the kid type shit. I'm standing there like Rick Moranis with my mouth wide open going, holy shit, that's my baby. I'm going to spend 60 hours.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's the difference. That's what differentiates like a really solid open world game from like a, you know, a Breath of the Wild that feels like it's an organic actual world that you're in versus a more like, you know, a lower tier Ubisoft one that's just like, yeah, guy just sat down and went, put that fucking there. And you know what I mean? Like when you can see the... when you can see the mapping, when you can see the planning is the thing that really makes it fall apart. Because I think also, like, I remember I sort of felt like with the first one, hearing that it's one third of a game, it's, you know, it's one third of the original game, and it's just that area, and they're fleshing that out into, like, a nearly 100-hour game. that sort of seemed on paper like it was kind of taking the piss. It's like, so they're turning this into three games and like, what, you're only getting like one third of a story, and isn't that just going to be like so artificially... So like the thing that you're saying about the scale of this one, it's impressive that they've also done essentially the opposite of that in the previous one. Like they've taken this pretty small thing and made that feel grand, and like at no part of that was it like, oh, this is a ripoff. Like I get to the end and there's no like proper ending of this game. Like you get... You know, you get essentially like a full arc within that game. Like you know, you were so satisfied by everything that you got. It didn't feel like, yeah, we've taken a couple of hours and we've just artificially added all this stuff on it. They totally justified it.
And this one is the middle chapter of a story too. So I think like narrative-wise, the size of it and the scale of it and the amount of variety of things that you're doing through it, I think negatively impacts the overall narrative. Like it's pretty disjointed and it's pretty... stop and start, and the sort of, and anytime you build up some momentum, you get to a new place where there's 100 things to do, and at least the way I wanted to do it, I was like, well, I want to go do those things, and then later
on, it's that classic open world thing of like, no, I've got this to do, why am I helping this kid find his baseball?
Yeah, literally the world is in trouble and we're like, damn dude, I gotta walk behind this dog. There's
but
a
I mean
lot-
like It sounds like it's the problem is that it's too gamey, which like it is a game, and like as good as the narrative can be, and like it just so happens that Final Fantasy VII has a great narrative. Honestly, what most people look to games for is the gameplay and whether or not it's fun, whether or not it's a good way to, you know, sink a few hours of your evening, and like. I broke the reality of the original game by breeding chocobos for like 50 hours when there was, you know, a life-threatening, world-threatening event literally in terms of the narrative story minutes away from happening.
Yeah.
So it's...
And I don't think it's like a problem necessarily. I just think it's a choice that they made that I think was the right choice. You know what I mean? Like there's no way you can have it both ways. And
it's the middle part of the arc too, right? They're always that's always going to be an inherent problem if you're the like you don't get to have like the solid beginning, you don't get to, you know, wrap it up like
That's what I was going to say is that you are always going to have a big question mark at the end of the game because it's chapter 2 of 3. So I don't know, and the shit that's in there, all of the individual little bits and pieces, there's so much satisfying shit in there that like I'm not saying it's makes the game bad. I'm just saying from a critical perspective, it just is a worse way of doing a straightforward narrative. You know what I mean? Is by pausing the movie every 15 minutes and being like, now here's a TV show. Like you just can't have that ever be the best way of showing you a story.
I wonder if in like 25 years time on whatever, like the PlayStation 8, if they'll do like a, here's the whole thing. Here's the whole remake, remastered, all as one game on this hardware that can handle a 400-hour game.
This isn't that far away from that. And like it, the way that they're doing this segmented release stuff and having these two be kind of different works really well for me. And I wouldn't mind if the third one was sort of different again. As you're going through to a lot of this side stuff, there's so many different mini games and shit in here. This is like a fucking WarioWare game. It's crazy. The amount of times you'll go to, you know, meet someone and they'll be just standing in some random part of the street and they'll be like, oh, I fucking wish I could do this or whatever. And then something will pop up on the side of the screen being like, here's how you control this guy's gizmo. Like, it happens all the time. There's a great card
you don't
game
need
in here.
For that.
the card game Queen's Blood, real fun. I like it a lot.
Oh,
cool.
Yeah, because there's been some great. It was Triple Triad that was Final Fantasy VIII. There's been some fantastic card games and other mini games specifically in the franchise. I'm pumped just to play that.
It's great. There's like 150 plus cards to collect over the course of it.
Oh,
and
mama.
What they do, it's a grid of three lanes, each with five squares in them. You and your opponent start on opposite ends, and each card has different abilities and some amount of squares that it will turn to your color. So once you put you get the first three, you can put a card down on any of them. Once you put a card down, if it has like a yellow square in front of it, you'll get one square in front that will then have a marker on it too that you can play another card on. If you're playing a card that would put a little marker down on one that has the enemy's marker there, you overtake their marker, and it's about figuring out when to play your cards. Some of them will like buff other cards. It's fucking sick. There's so much to it. It's a great time. I really enjoyed playing Queen's Blood.
Hell yeah.
What else? I mean, I overall, I think in terms of the story, the characters and the sense of fun and adventure in that, top notch. It's great.
Yeah.
The plot of what's going on is still confusing and is weird. And interesting in a way that is, I think, elevated from it just being a Final Fantasy VII remake up and down. But I do understand that isn't to some people's taste as well, and some people haven't been into that aspect of it. I am. Even if it isn't pulling it off incredibly all of the time.
It's just so interesting conceptually. Like I can't think of anything else that's done this of like... Yeah, it does have all those same elements that people remember and have the familiarity for, but it is diverging in a way where it assumes that you have the prior knowledge, and it also weirdly assumes that the other one exists as well. Like, it's just, it's so fascinating. They could have just gone one for one and had that polish on it and made it look, you know, the way it does. And it still, I think, would have been a smash hit, but it's such an interesting, you know, thing to, yeah, kind of to make it almost like a thank you letter to the people that have like been into it for this amount of time.
Especially when Final Fantasy VII is now its own separate series where a bunch of the other games in it already had this kind of stuff kind of going on in them a bit. You know what I mean? So, like, it isn't that weird if you're taking the overall Final Fantasy VII stuff rather than just the initial game. I appreciate how it's doing all of that stuff. But then I think the main part of the story of Final Fantasy VII and why people love it so much is the characters and how they interact and how they are, and their characterization is so clear and well done. And this game is fucking nailing that aspect of doing a remake of Final Fantasy VII. It's doing complete justice to like the thing of like having this crew of weird friends who are going on this journey together, and they're all, you know, slightly offbeat and everything. It totally works. And most of the writing in there is great. The performances are really good. Like, it's melodramatic and all of that stuff, but it's doing some heartstring tugging when it feels like it. It's doing some really funny humor when it feels like it, and it misses the bar on some of that stuff, but whatever, because the overall feeling that you get from this game is of this like really enjoyable like world tour that feels so fun the whole way through. It's really impressive.
Well, me and Ben were talking the other night about this in relation to Like a Dragon Infinite Wealth, and it's like, a lot it like is that the mark too. Right. It's the mark of the great RPG where you have the number of people that you've met and discovered, like your party is at like the maximum number of people that you've met. Mm-hmm. And then that like first new character that comes in at the point of the RPG where you have to decide who to bump out if you want to have this new person in, and being really like, I think it's the mark of a great one when you're like, oh, my boys, I don't want to... I don't know who I want to get rid of. I love them all. They're all so good, but I want to see what this new guy's all about. He seems cool.
The fact like that
if you've
all
got
of
that
them...
stress, that means it's a good one.
Totally. The fact that all of them are running about with you in the world so that whoever you come across, they've got all of them there to write for if they want to. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Mm. And you can switch
That's
your...
really cool.
You can switch your parties, the three you're actually using to fight at any time. Outside of combat. So, like, all that stuff is done with a complete understanding of what it is that enduring fans of Final Fantasy VII appreciate about that game, probably the largest chunk of which is that I like this crew of goofballs. I'm hopped up on them.
Yeah, it's interesting. I don't know if you guys agreed with this, but the first game, or sorry, the in Remake, it didn't feel like that sort of level of bonding and cohesion had happened by the end of the game. It was still a bit more like, oh, we're these disparate characters thrown together, and wow, the events that are happening are so crazy, and like, you almost develop more of a love and affinity for like Sector 7 than you do the individual characters and then them as a team. And then all of the sort of like the post credits, you know, scenes and the teaser trailers we've got, it's all like them being like, hey, aren't we a bunch of pals out on the road together?
Yeah.
And it felt a little like it had taken a bit of a leap from the first game to this. But like you've been saying, Nox, the middle part of this game is all about going on a big road trip together and accumulating some more party members. I know that there are some that you do have as party members in the original game that you don't in this, but the sort of accumulation of all of these like pals and the interplay. And I this is not something that you could do in the original game in terms of having them all on screen together running around, because it just wouldn't have been possible for, you know, the engine to handle. That sounds like it's lent into that in a really satisfying and rewarding way, which is cool.
Totally has. Like that, this is the bit where pretty naturally they all start palling around. And like one of the mechanics in this is with your main group, because like you said, you had Barrett, Tifa, Cloud in the first one, and then like Red came in at the end but wasn't playable. Yep. He's playable in this, and then you get Yuffie, who was from the intermission DLC thing, which you also need to play for this. And then you also
These would all make great coasters. I would love to have any single one of these.
How about a Kate Sith coaster? Cute little cat on a cute little Moogle.
Yeah. Yeah. Double. Fucking any of them. Honestly,
He's here. He's got like sort of a weirdly slow Scottish accent. Like he talks at an odd pace, but I don't know, but he's absolutely fine. And then there's a couple other people later who show up in the story, but you don't really party up with yet. They're probably more.
Yeah. Okay.
You start, there's like a whole relationship mechanic, like a social link thing with each of those main crew of, your five other pals who they start off the game with like, if you hold L1, it'll show you the status, and it's just this sort of blank face that'll be over them. And as you go on through the game, it'll start increasing in a smile.
Love that. Love that.
And nice. So, going and doing, like, the side missions have a character who they'll sort of be based around. Like, if you go up to someone who's trying to run their bar, then Tifa is the person because she's run a bar and so on.
Right.
And you'll develop those as you go out, and then there's like a couple of bits from the main game that were like a little, or there was like a little date at the Golden Saucer, and it'll play into that. Mm-hmm. It's all there, baby. And like becoming better friends with Red 13. Ah, nice. Me and the dog are getting along. He's cool.
Yep.
Yeah.
It's
he was one of the coasters I got. I got Red 13, and then I got a group image. Right. So,
not bad.
I honestly got, I got the best
That's
ones.
That's a pretty good
call. Rub it in.
I don't know, man.
You got two different ones. Well,
if I could have like four total Renos, that'd be awesome.
We'll be, I guess we'll dig in a couple of weeks, Ben, and we can give our follow-up thoughts. But in the meantime, we've been working on our social links over here in Japan.
Yep.
2 days ago, we had a wonderful experience. We went to a place that was recommended to us by friend of the show, Nick from White Reaper. Great band. Check them out. We went to the 84 Hashi Cafe in Tokyo, which is a secret cafe. You have to like book through basically a tour guide who meets you at the station and walks you. She said, oh, it's the walk's a few minutes away. And then it was like literally right there. it's a hidden spot, and it is a cafe that is run by a man called Chokan, who worked at Nintendo from 1984. He worked on Donkey Kong Country, he worked on Yoshi's Island, he worked on Earthbound, he worked on Pokemon, and he's not at Nintendo anymore, but he's set up this cafe that is full of memorabilia that he's collected. Original drawings on the wall by Miyamoto, and like he has the Mario Brothers original
Miyamoto
score.
Having drawn like a cock and balls.
Well, we were saying he's done this, like it's a drawing that he did for Chokan to like celebrate the cafe opening. So it's like a little drawing of like Mario sitting down having a meal.
Wow.
And it's like, it's annoying to me that Miyamoto doesn't do more, like there's no like, you know, print of like a Miyamoto artwork that you can get. Like he, you know, he never does like any kind of like original stuff that they reproduce, weirdly. But he's got like the sheet music to the Mario Brothers theme that, I think the story was that Koji Kondo just like found it in a desk like randomly and gave to him as a gift that's now on the wall of this cafe.
Holy shit.
And so basically you just kind of sit there and hang out. It's like very small groups. It was us and one other dude. And you get taken in by this like tour guide translator and you just kind of hang out with Choka and you can just ask him whatever you want and she'll tell you some of the stories about the stuff that's in there.
Where do you get your ideas? That'd be my first question.
Well, and so his job, he was like a playtester. He also was like providing notes on games. Like he wasn't like a QA tester like you have now, where it's often like even outsourced. He was like he was hired at the same time as Miyamoto and Koji Kondo and one other guy who back in 1984, which again he mentions like. It was just a playing card company when I was hired. Tommy was like, where did you get your idea to join the company from?
Great question.
And he literally was, he was like, well, I lived in Kyoto. I wanted to work in Kyoto. And Nintendo was one of the big companies. So I just gave it a crack, got hired.
Yeah.
And
then, they were hiring, didn't want to leave the city. Yeah.
Yeah. A year later, the Famicom, you know, comes out or is you know in development and everyone pivots to designing video games and so yeah fascinating story.
He's got a big TV behind the bar that's just playing like old ads from back in the day for like the Famicom disc system and like Nintendo Golf and all this stuff. He's got when you open the door it plays the Zelda the Zelda noise kind of plays when you walk in the room. Yeah, it was like being in a fever dream. It was just, I said to Ben at one point, like, I can't believe that a place like this exists. And they give you a sheet of paper when you get there that's like, take photos, you know, post stuff, but just don't put the location. Like, the whole thing of it is we want the place to remain a secret. Because obviously if this was just anyone can rock up at any time, there'd be, you know, there'd be lines around the, like, it'd obviously be like him having his spot blown up. So, like, the fact that you're there in this, like, secret thing and you get 90 minutes and it's a small group and he just hangs out and he's like genuinely really interested in everyone. Like we, you know, they asked us what we do and we mentioned this and they seemed really interested in this and his translator, Hiryu took down our website and Instagram and said she was going to listen. So hopefully she takes all this episode in and transcribes it and translates it back to Chokan.
Quick version, Final Fantasy VII Rebirth good, Ben and Tommy in Japan. If you want to just do the fast summary.
Yeah. He was like genuinely like he made me find our channel on YouTube and he subscribed to it. It's not a cheap sort of experience, but in terms of how much it costs, but then the value, like, it's A, priceless, the experience. They give you a bunch of stuff as well. Like, you get a little passport. I wish I had it to hand. I think it's in my suitcase. But it is pretty much a full recreation of, like, a passport. Like a little gold embossing on the front of like Tokyo 84 Cafe. The pages inside are like custom printed to look like they have the sort of repeating passport, you know, like security thing on it. Right. But it's like, you know, Nintendo stuff. You get a stamp. Like they've made a custom stamp for the cafe and it's like got the date in the middle and there's like a little thing of like, yeah, we want you to come back each time you're in Japan, and you like go from level 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 and stuff.
How many?
Oh, and it's personally like autographed by Chokan as well. Oh, wow. And like, you know, yeah.
And I said, if you fill up the passport, if you get every page stamped, does it mean we get to move in and live here? And then the translator laughed, and then she translated that into Japanese, and that got a big laugh from him. And I got to tell you, killing simultaneously in two separate languages, a great feeling.
Dude, getting that bang bang. You don't get it very often. 1, 2. How many Reno coasters did you walk out of there with?
They did sell coasters.
Yeah,
did
I got some coasters. I did buy their coaster set from there. They have like their kind of little logo thing that you can buy on like a keychain and some stickers.
Mm.
But then that's the thing. It's like you're walking around and you forget that like, you know, nothing else in there is for sale. So you're looking at all this artwork and being like, God damn, I want this. Oh no, hang on. This is just, and he's got like a little shelf of photos of him and his boys. Like they apparently, when the Nintendo staff are up in Tokyo, that's where they come and hang out. Cause it's a little easy off the grid place. And he, on his Instagram, he has a photo from just recently. He went down to Kyoto and they had like a 40-year catch up anniversary dinner of like all the guys that started there back in 84. Yeah, it was cool because you kind of read about it and you go, oh yeah, ex-employee, and you'd sort of wonder like, you know, why he's not there anymore, what the pivot into doing this cafe, how it would have been received by them. But it's cool that he's like very much still like, yeah, tapped in with all those guys and keeps in touch, and they're like, the fact that they've like given him stuff for the walls and like in Miyamoto's case made something specifically for him. Like they're clearly all, you know, still friends with him and think it's a cool thing that he's doing.
Yeah.
I asked him, I've always been curious, like when Donkey Kong Country kind of came in to Nintendo Japan, obviously like being one of the first times they worked with someone from the outside, like what they would have, what they made of it, like stylistically, like it looking so different to sort of like the Japanese kind of style of art direction and everything.
Mm.
And he just kind of talked about how he just thought it looked so mind blowing, and he gave some feedback on stuff that ended up kind of changing that game a little bit in terms of like how, like the difficulty of it and how it felt to control and stuff, I think.
Wow.
I also said to him, I had to try this on. I said, "Have any of your boys given you any information about the Switch 2 that we could use on our podcast for a scoop?" And again, that he loved that, and he was like, "They don't tell me anything. I'm too much of a blabbermouth. I know nothing."
Yeah, I'm on a Nintendo watch list.
He said he's on a list. Yeah,
I think that's fitting though. That like, you know, you go to the cafe in Japan with, you know, an insider from Nintendo, get some real behind the scenes shit, and the main stuff you talk about are the two times that you made him laugh. That's appropriate.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. It's like we were saying afterwards was like we wanted to, you know, it would be so good to have unlimited time with him and not have the language barrier,
because
there's heaps of other stuff I wanted to know. But it's like if it's, you know, you're having to like say it to a translator who, by the way, at the start of the thing mentions that like she doesn't play games, she doesn't know what any of this shit is. So you're already being like, well, I'm kind of having to like also get across to her like what the thing actually is, and then have her like translated. At a certain point I went, I'm just going to try and say something funny to him. Like there's no point trying to like get like deep into the nitty gritty of like what it was like to be there back in the day. But
I'd have made the same choice. I'd have been trying to get that double laugh the whole rest of the cafe, the coffee at the cafe of Alexandria that you were at with all this beautiful artwork.
Truly great experience. If you're in Tokyo, you got to look it up. 84 Hashi. You can find the link pretty easily and, book your... I mean, we booked with only a few days' notice, so I feel like it is still...
Yeah,
because they were like, oh, yeah, please promote it. Please talk about it. Just, you know, don't give away the location, obviously. So, you know, they I kind of thought maybe they do want it to be, like, you know, super low-key, but they're up for the word being out there. So, Yeah, I could not recommend it enough. Like, we walked out and we were just like, holy shit, what a crazy experience.
That's so cool.
It's funny because they sort of like, yeah, obviously they bundle you into an elevator. They're like, there was a two-door security system. So it's like, it's legit. And it just, because you're coming into like a faceless, like, 10-story building, and it's all, and it was quite narrow and small, and you know, the cafe is kind of big for a cafe, but then again you're like sort of very politely, like, you know, like guided back to the elevator. They're all waving as the elevator doors close.
Yeah.
Like, it was, it's so personal and friendly, and like they, yeah, they followed us on our personal accounts, and like they also, we should say, we were recommended this by Nick, as you said at the start, Tommy, and we'd both be messaging him, and he'd said to you like, mention my name, you know, when you guys are there. And yeah, they're like, obviously, how did you find out about the place? We mention, oh yeah, it's our friend Nick. And then they're like, oh, Nick! And like, Chokan starts drumming, and they're like, they've clearly, they like know everyone who's visited, and like super, it's a super personal experience.
Ben, we're completely losing you here, I'm sorry to say. Oh, wow. We are really, I wish you could hear this, folks.
Okay. Well, I'm very excited to edit this. Hey, Tommy, I reckon we just close things out here because Ben, I think, might be broken. I'll figure out how to edit this into something that makes sense.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, you'll have him telling the story.
I'm excited to hear it when I do, and then whatever happens, I'll cut this bit into the end. Yeah. We've lost Ben during that story, but maybe you've heard the full thing if I've got his report on tape.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know what's happened here. Now he's just completely frozen up.
Who cares?
I don't know what he looks like. His screen to me looks like that like filter you can put on Photoshop where it just like blows out all the colors.
Yeah, he looks like an Instagram post from 2012.
Yeah, that's it.
All right, let's get out of here then, like Ben has already.
Yep. It's a great yarn. I hope he managed to close it out before realizing that his internet had fucked up. It's just good to know that even in a country where the internet is so good, there just is something about the curse of being Australian that is still going to fuck up your connection for you at some point.
Yeah, there's got to be like an RFID chip in our passports or something like that that just breaks the whole thing.
Well, Adam, good to see you. We'll be back next week. We will have been to Super Nintendo World, so we'll be talking about that
on next week's episode. Baby, I'm excited to hear 2 seconds of what that's like and then complete silence and pixelation afterwards.
Yep. Oh, now he's just completely gone. All right. Thank you for listening, everyone. Filthycasuals.com.au for the Patreon, the YouTube channel. We've got the Let's Plays. We've got all sorts of stuff on there, hundreds and hundreds of videos. Go and check that out. Come and see us live at the Melbourne International Comedy Festival. Mm-hmm. Sundays in April the 7th, 14th and 21st at the Coopers Inn. Tickets on sale now. Thank you very much for listening. We'll see you next time. And as we say here at the end of every episode of Filthy Casuals... Oh, no, not Adam too. No, I'm all alone. No.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.